Probably because Akkad has not been discovered, we have very little Akkadian architecture. So we can't evaluate any changes that a new dynasty may have represented in public architecture. I'm guessing that Sargon would have used very traditional forms of architecture as a way to show his connection to the past. Until we find Akkad, we won't know that for certain. Akkadian was the official language of the royal bureaucracy, and so we see a language shift for the first time in the history that we've discussed. Remember, cuneiform is a script. It was used to record Sumerian, but the symbols could be used for any language. We saw this at Ebla, where the local language, Eblite, was recorded in cuneiform script. This shift in language could be interpreted as a way to govern his lands in a consistent manner, and so this might be this might help us identify Akkad as an empire, but that is debatable. We know that Sargon sent enzis. Some of them were his sons, others were presumably trusted officials, to oversee different cities in the south, especially. That's where the texts survive. Sargon also established a uniform system of weights and measurements that was especially useful for levying tribute or other obligations to the state. It standardized what goods were necessary for a city or a region to provide. One of the most significant decisions that Sargon made to consolidate his power was to install his daughter as a priestess. Enheduanna was the high priestess of the moon god Nanna at Ur, and this would give her control over the temple lands in Ur and also other property controlled by the cult in southern Mesopotamia. She may also have served some priestly function at Uruk, which could represent a unification of these powerful religious centers. And so we see Sargon as the military leader and his daughter becoming a very prominent religious leader in different cities. So we have the same priestess for multiple cities and multiple cults. By definition, that would unify worship. While serving as priestess, Enheduanna composed hymns to the goddess Inanna and many other deities, and this makes her the first known author in history. It's nice that it's a woman. The songs extol Inanna's strength and wisdom, placing her as a critical member in the assemblies of the gods. And remember, Sargon also has this close connection to Inanna. So it's not surprising that his daughter would be focused on her cult. Inanna glories in battle. In her joyful heart, she performs the song of death on the plain. She performs the song in her heart. She washes their weapons with blood and gore. Axes smash heads, spears penetrate, and maces are covered in blood. Somewhat less martial in tone, Inanna also has enormous power. And Enheduanna writes in another poem, "I am Enheduanna, the high priestess of the moon goddess. My lady, let me proclaim your magnificence in all lands and your glory. Let me praise your ways and greatness. Who rivals you in divinity? Queen of all given powers, unveiled clear light, unfailing woman wearing brilliance, cherished in heaven and earth. My queen of fundamental forces, you lift up the elements. You gather in powers like the storm god. You howl, grain wilts on the ground, swollen flood rushing down the mountain. You are Inanna, supreme in heaven and earth." If you recall our discussion of Mesopotamian deities, you see the unrivaled power and also how vicious a goddess could be. And so all of this is described in these poems. There are also phrases that recall the power of the king. The king, too, is unrivaled in power. He is he's an enormous military force. And so any text from Sargon's era or those of his successors that uses this phrasing may have been a deliberate way to connect the king to the power of the gods.